It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We Could Have Been Happy Here is a collection of short stories that all take place in Iowa. Intimate, personal stories that give us glimpses into what may be going on below the surface in the state that we all know so well. This is Keith Lesmeister's first book. Lesmeister teaches at Northeast Iowa Community College. He grew up in the Cedar Rapids area. He now lives in Decorah, and he is here with me today. Hello, Keith.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I would love it if you could start us off by reading just a little bit from the title story of the collection, We Could Have Been Happy Here, which is the last story in the collection. So I realize we're kind of starting at the end, but I think it would give everyone a little flavor of what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is just the first section of the last story, as you mentioned. I was back at Lyle's farm sitting. Even after the last episode out there, he had the courage to invite me back. Circumstances were such. Plus, we'd been friends long enough, and he thought to give me another chance. Lyle was always hoping the best for me. How it came about, I'd been using for about a year, losing weight, eyes black from no sleep. My gums were just starting to recede, and the day before Lyle called, I'd started my basement apartment on fire, brewing a batch in a plastic root beer bottle. My best buddy lost most of his hair and burnt part of his face in the explosion, and I knew then it was time. I dropped him off at the emergency room and left town after he'd been secured. That was about the time Lyle needed someone to farm sit. Over the phone, I told him everything. He listened for a while, and then there was a long pause, like he was really thinking about things. He'd always been considerate in that way. Then he told me, lesson number one in kicking bad habits, get out of town, away from other users. Still, he said, it won't be easy. Then he asked about my kids. Haven't seen them in a year, I said. Not good, he said.
That's Keith Lesmeister reading a little bit from his story, We Could Have Been Happy Here, from the collection We Could Have Been Happy Here, his first book, a collection of short stories. And Keith, I imagine that that story takes you inside a life that is incredibly different from your own. And there's an really diverse collection of characters in this short story collection. So in spite of the fact that you're an Iowan and all of these stories take place in Iowa, did you make an effort to try to reach outside your sphere to write about people that were unlike you?
Oh, yeah, without question. I like to drink lots of coffee. I like to shoot hoops in my backyard. I like to walk my dog twice a day. I like to attend my kids' soccer matches, and all of that is incredibly boring. It's wonderful for me, but it's horrible for writing fiction. And so one of my teachers in grad school challenged me with the idea of writing what I don't know. And I said, well, how do you do that? And he said, think of worst case scenarios for yourself. And as I was thinking about, or as I was writing these short stories, the one thing that kept coming up is, what would it be like to be estranged from my children and my wife? And, you know, when I desperately want to be with them, what would that situation be like? And that's how some of these stories came about.
Did you get inspiration from, like, newspaper articles? Things that made you think, oh, that sounds so terrible? or where did you get your ideas?
You know, I over the years, you know, I have various conversations with people, acquaintances, friends of mine. And I remember one in particular, this guy, he was, again, an acquaintance of mine, and his wife and his newborn baby moved away from him, you know, like 4 hours away. And as he was telling me this story, he broke down crying. And that really stayed with me. That had an emotional effect on me. And as I was thinking about this, because you're right, these characters, these stories are in some cases vastly different from my own experience. And so I was trying to put myself in the shoes of others, trying to imagine what that world would be like. And some of the inspiration came from just getting to know the characters as best as possible, spending time with them, writing out what they say and do. And some of it came from, you know, as I mentioned earlier, that conversation with an acquaintance I had. Those things were, I think, the inspiration for some of this.
The man in the story that you just read us a little bit from, we spend two stories with him, both on his friend Lyle's farmstead. Both include cows that aren't where they're supposed to be. And so there are definitely some moments of humor. But, you know, when you just give me a thumbnail sketch of here's a guy who he struggles with addiction. He has lost his family. He's estranged from his children. He loses his friend's cows.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
This is not a particularly sympathetic person. This is not somebody that I think I really want to get to know him. But you find a lot of humanity in that character. What's that process like for you of really getting inside a character like that and making him human, not just a list of really, really dreadful facts?
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I'm glad that you've found him compelling. I think of these characters in getting to know them and sharing, as what you just said, their humanity with readers and others, through simply getting to know them in a way that is probably comparable to how you get to know anybody, a coworker or a friend, which is to say, I try to spend as much time with them as possible. So when I was writing this collection, you know, I'd write drafts and drafts and drafts of these stories, putting these characters in you know, unflattering situations, and seeing how they might act or what they might say or how they might respond. And in terms of just, you know, figuring out a way to create, you know, or to bring forth this sort of shared humanity, as you mentioned, I think is done through the use of, or through exploring or finding out what this person's fears are, what his or her vulnerabilities are, what do they want in life. I mean, these are all things that we share together, these sort of insecurities, these wants, these fears, these desires, and what might be keeping us from those. And we're all, I think, sort of moving through this with a lot of fear and maybe a little insecurity and wondering how it's all going to turn out. And as much as I can share that or reveal that in the characters, I think that's how writers sort of get to that question or that idea that you just brought up about, you know, revealing their humanity, sharing their humanity.
Has this exercise of writing about people that are very unlike yourself and empathizing with them, has that changed your outlook on the world, or is this a sort of an outlook that you already had?
Well, I think it has changed my outlook in that it makes me feel like I'm not alone out there. You know, it makes me feel like there are people who I can connect with who share the same kinds of fears and trepidations and insecurities and vulnerabilities. And that's what I think I'm most interested in, is sort of what and who are people in their most stripped down vulnerable state. And so I've learned, you know, a little bit about myself in that way, that, you know, it's okay to have these kinds of ideas, these sort of vulnerabilities, because we all do. And I think when I'm, as a writer, you know, I'm reading a lot too. And so that's been quite a joy. As I wrote the story collection, I was reading a lot of short stories and to connect with other characters and other people on the page in that way has illuminated, I think, and provided for me a kind of connection that I've been trying to reach or have through this process of reading.
And do you carry that with you in the real world? Like somebody cuts you off in traffic, do you think, I wonder what they're going through?
It's definitely given me a fuller picture of other people. It helps me to sort of slow down and think, all right, you know, there's probably a million other things on this person's mind, and you know, maybe this person is having a really bad day, way worse than mine. And so, in that way, I think it has.
There is a thread of melancholy that goes through many of these stories, although I didn't leave this collection feeling depressed or crushed by life. Was there sort of a fine line that you felt you needed to walk as a writer, because you take on a lot of difficult topics?
Yeah. I wanted to toe that line. I'm glad you said that, because I think there is, you know, life isn't all, you know, roses and Mai Tais and you know, sunsets on the beach. And so I wanted to explore some of that darker side while also not losing sight of, you know, how do we bring ourselves out of those situations, which for me, I think the idea I was exploring here, at least that was on my mind, was how do these intimate connections with other people help bring us through tough times? And so even if the tough times, they're going through the tough times, that there is sort of a melancholy undercurrent, that there's hope through these sort of human interactions, be it with a loved one or with a total stranger.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Keith Lesmeister. His first book has just been published. It's called We Could Have Been Happy Here. It's a collection of short stories that all take place in Iowa. He teaches at Northeast Iowa Community College, and he has a bunch of Iowa appearances coming up here on Friday. Tomorrow, he'll be at River Lights Bookstore in Dubuque at 5:30. Saturday, Beaverdale Books in Des Moines at 2 p.m., and also on Saturday, Page Turner's Bookstore at 4:30 p.m. in Indianola. We will talk more in just a moment. And then later in the hour, my conversation with comedian Kumail Nanjiani. He's coming back to Grinnell College to give the commencement address at his alma mater. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in a few minutes, my conversation with comedian Kumail Nanjiani. He's coming back to Iowa. He graduated from Grinnell College back in 2001, and he's coming back to give the commencement address this year. With me right now is Keith Lesmeister. He has published his first book. It's a collection of short stories called We Could Have Been Happy Here, and he's in the midst of a book tour right now. He's going to be at River Lights Bookstore in Dubuque tomorrow at 5:30, and then on Saturday, a very busy day, Beaverdale Books in Des Moines at 2 p.m. and Page Turner's Bookstore in Indianola at 4:30 p.m. And Keith, I would love for you to read a little bit more from the book. This is from a different story, as obviously in a collection of short stories. We'll jump around a little bit. This is from a short story called Lie Here Next to Me. Would you read a little bit of that?
Yeah. And I'm going to read, it's about midway through the story, and, well, actually, you know, I'll just read it, and then I can maybe explain a little bit afterward if need be.
Okay.
The kitchen timer dinged just a few minutes before the doorbell. Sally glanced at the phone and realized that she'd made a mistake. Had she kept the ringer on, or even the answering machine, maybe someone wouldn't be dropping by. She was angered that she hadn't thought of this, and angered more that there were people who would assume that dropping by was okay. The door opened before she could get there. "Well," her grandmother said, "is this what college kids wear these days? It smells good in here." Sally looked down at herself. "I was baking a cake, and, well, I wasn't expecting company." She paced back to the kitchen and put a fork through the middle of the cake. It came out clean. "I called to tell you I was coming, but something must have happened to your phone. It kept ringing and ringing, but I knew someone was here. How are you anyway, sweetheart?" Her grandmother set her purse on the fir floor, gave Sally a gentle hug, and walked down the hallway before waiting for an answer. Sally did not want to see her grandmother and mother together. It was okay for Sally to do this on her own, to grieve, to be miserable, to be selfish, to be whatever. But with someone else, especially her mother's mother, it felt too much, as though her mother's imminent passing was connected to so much more than herself, and for Sally, it was easier to think of this as an isolated moment affecting only her. She'd been grieving for so long and by herself that having to deal with and grieve with others was simply too much. Sally didn't want her grandmother's comfort because that would mean something like being obligated to reciprocate, and she didn't want to comfort anyone but herself and her mother.
That's Keith Lesmeister reading from his story, Lie Here Next to Me, from the Connect collection, We Could Have Been Happy Here. And maybe we should put that in context just a little bit and tell us a little bit about Sally.
Yeah, Sally is back home from college, and her mother is basically home from the hospital and kind of waiting to die. She's been diagnosed with cancer. Sally is at home trying to take care of her in her final days. And on this particular day, she unplugged the phone because she didn't want to talk to anyone. And in addition, she's been wearing the same tattered underwear and T-shirt for the last few days. And I should also mention that Sally is just back. She has her own sort of relational difficulties, and she's just back from her first year at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
So she's incredibly alone. She is an only child. Her mother is a single mother, and she's taking care of her mother in her final week or weeks. She is estranged from her girlfriend and has no one to turn to or to talk to, and you get this sense of isolation, and then the grandmother shows up, and you realize that part of her not having anyone to talk to is also a choice.
Correct. Yeah, she really the grieving part of it for her is difficult, but even more so the idea of having to deal with other people and grieve with other people is far more concerning and concerning to her.
And to share her mother with other people in these final days.
Right.
She doesn't want to share her.
Yes, she wants the moment all for herself. And in fact, she's also in the process of baking a cake, which was a tradition of her and her mother's. Every Friday, they would bake a cake together, and that's what they would eat. They wouldn't go out for pizza. They wouldn't go out for burgers. They wouldn't do anything. They'd just stay home together and bake a cake and eat it all. And that's what she's doing.
Earlier in our conversation, you talked about how your worst-case scenario would be losing your family somehow. And this was one of those stories that really spoke to me. As a mother, you know, you go through all of these fears, like, what if something happens to me and I leave my children to fend for themselves? You know, what if all of the worst case scenarios, the things that you run through in your brain. So did you kind of go through a list in your brain of these are the things I've been secretly afraid of for years?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and all of this is, you know, having to deal with loss, you know, dealing with aging parents, perhaps, or not. I mean, Sally's mother is quite young, and leaving this world far too early. And what is it like when you don't have the emotional maturity to deal with something this profound? I mean, these were all sort of questions in my mind as was sort of exploring Sally's story.
As you are doing your book tour, sharing these stories with audiences, and of course, encountering people who've read them, which is a wonderful experience for writers in many ways, although I'm sure there are some nerves involved in that as well. What are you connecting with people on? Or have you been surprised by some of the things that they've been picking out?
You know, it's just been really wonderful to connect with audiences and with folks, bookstores. I was at Prairie Lights in Iowa City on Monday. I was in my hometown, Dragonfly Books, Tuesday. And then last night I was over in Madison, Wisconsin. And it's just what's really encouraging to me is how many people will come out to support literature and short stories and books, and to be able to connect with people who sort of love stories and words and language as much as you do is really an uplifting thing.
Have your students read your stories?
I had a few students on Tuesday here in Decorah. I had a few students show up to the reading, and the reading took place. The event took place at Pulpit Rock Brewery, and so it was in an outdoor patio. And at one point, I looked up, and I looked straight across the patio, and one of my former students was reading the book. And that's a very strange thing. It's a very sort of strange image for a teacher to see, is to see a former student holding the book and reading it. And then, you know, afterward, she mentioned that she had read the first story, but didn't make any comments about it. And I wasn't about to ask her either.
Oh, that's so, like, oh, you got your hair cut.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So
only way,
how about
way
those?
Worse, right?
Yeah. How about those finals? What are you doing this summer? Yeah. Let's change the subject.
So really, she didn't say anything at all.
No, just that she had read the first story, and that was it.
Uh-huh.
But it was really sweet too, because I had another student who purchased a book for her parents, herself and her parents, and I thought that was very thoughtful. And so yeah, it's an interesting experience to have it out in the world, and you know any person being able to pick it up, including your former students.
Well, we've talked about how most of these stories are not autobiographical, although they take place in a landscape that you're very familiar with. I mean, one of the stories takes place in Decorah. There are other stories that we're not sure exactly where they are. And then we spend a lot of time in Cedar Rapids, that corridor area. Since you went outside your realm of familiarity in so many ways, why create the landscape that is so familiar?
Oh yeah, that for me is what sort of grounds the stories. And I will say that I, without question, that you know, in terms of the writerly advice of write what you know, that definitely applies to setting. I grew up in Cedar Rapids. I now live in Decorah, Iowa, and I've always been sort of fascinated with the Iowa landscape. And I know that sounds like a funny thing to say when most people think of, you know, this place as sort of, you know, flat as a table. But I find something really, really beautiful about the landscape. And I like take here in Northeast Iowa, for example, where, you know, the land is pretty dramatic here. The land will slope into these steep ravines and rise up into these really wonderful rocky bluff formations. And two, in you know, down in my Iowa City in Cedar Rapids, where there's more agricultural fields, the way sort of a tree line can cut through a cornfield, and there's something, I think, kind of majestic about that. So I guess to answer your question, it's just part of who I am, what I grew up with, and what I know, and what I've observed my entire life, this landscape. So it felt only natural to incorporate that into the stories.
And there's at least one moment in the very first story in the collection where your character just feels the bliss of being in this landscape, of being in rural Iowa, of breathing clean air. Were you hoping to communicate, is that a little bit autobiographical, of your love for the landscape?
Absolutely. That part of it, without question, is I do really think that this area, especially in Northeast Iowa, where I've spent the last 20 years of my life, it's pretty spectacular up here. And you can kind of get kind of mesmerized by, you know, the roll and the feel of the landscape. Like I said, those sort of steep ravines and rocky bluffs and the way sort of cold water streams cut through the landscape. It's really pretty stunning.
There is one story. It revolves all around basketball, although also relationships. And I know that you are a big basketball fan. Was this story somewhat autobiographical?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple parts of it that are autobiographical. The first one is that my mother is an immigrant from the Philippines, And so the two boys, or the three boys, are from this Filipino mother and this Caucasian father. Though my father was not in the Navy, he was in the Marines. So that part of it is somewhat autobiographical. And the other part of it that's autobiographical is that I remember growing up, and you know, my mother would make this sort of collage, this hodgepodge of Filipino dishes mixed with like sort of your traditional American family cuisine. And so I thought that would be kind of a fun part to put in it. But the story took place because I was sitting, I think this was like 3 years ago, on New Year's Day. Of course, nobody's working on New Year's Day. And I looked over at my son, who was maybe 8 or 9 at the time, and I said to him, I need the name of two characters. And he gave me the names, Jake and Danny. And I said, what do they want more than anything in the world? And he said, they want to be the best basketball players in the world. And so that's really how that story took shape. And of course, it was easy for me. It wasn't easy, but it was fun for me to write because I am a basketball fanatic. I grew up, you know, as a jock. I played football in high school and basketball. That part of it, that basketball aspect, was definitely touched on a very personal part of my life.
What does your son think of the story?
Well, I don't know if he's read it, but he was really excited to know that it was included in the collection of stories. So I think at some point, the only story I've read to my kids is the story, the only one they've heard in its entirety is the next story, or the story before that, which is called Between the Fireflies, about the two young children who are tasked with taking out the cottontail rabbits. I read that to them because the narrator in that story, he's older, but he's looking back on an experience when he's in fifth or sixth grade.
So he's the same age, roughly, or in...
Exactly. My kids sort of range around that age, that grade right now.
Well, why don't you read us just a little bit of Between the Fireflies?
Sure, I could do that.
And you probably need to set the stage for this one because there are two sixth graders in this story and Alice's dad has been deployed. So he's...
Yeah. So Alice's dad was deployed overseas. This is 2003, summer of 2003, Iraq and Afghanistan. Alice's father is being deployed overseas. And before he leaves, he tasks his daughter with taking out all of the cottontail rabbits that have been invading her family's vegetable gardens, because they have these huge elaborate gardens that they also try to make money on by selling the vegetables at the farmer's market. The narrator is this young boy who kind of observes all of this, and he's also along for the ride. He's been brought along on this adventure, and so this is from his perspective. And I'll just read just a little bit of this. Dusk in Iowa is a slow process, the sun growing distant and weak, casting long shadows over the open countryside, airborne bugs taking flight from their daytime nests. Everything feels calm and steady when the day's demands are tucked away for evening. Alice was an inch taller than me, with knobby knees and sharp elbows, sad eyes, and a face that gave the appearance of neediness, though her actions belied such impressions. She had short brown hair and distinct emerald eyes. I felt about her the way I've subsequently felt about most women in my life who I call friends, a profound sense of protection. This, I felt then, was a calling, my deepest need to fulfill. At that point, I think I would have done anything for her, though I doubt she knew any of this. I never actually told her, even in the years since, how I felt. She strolled down the driveway, pellet gun resting on her shoulder. I talked to my dad on the phone, she said. He's leaving tomorrow from California. He called you a marksman, a ringer, a dead shot. Tell him thanks, I said, when you talk to him again. One down, 1 million to go, Alice said.
Just a moment from the story Between the Fireflies from the collection We Could Have Been Happy Here by Keith Lesmeister. Your first book, I assume we'll see much more from you in the years to come. Keith, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Truly, truly a pleasure. Thank you.
Keith Lesmeister. He teaches at Northeast Iowa Community College. And again, the book is We Could Have Been Happy Here. He's got a bunch of Iowa appearances coming up just this weekend. Friday, tomorrow, River Lights Bookstore in Dubuque, Iowa at 5:30. Saturday, Beaverdale Books in Des Moines at 2 p.m. And also Page Turner's Bookstore in Indianola at 4:30. Coming up in just a moment, my conversation with comedian Kumail Nanjiani. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.